96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
You're now in the Essential Zone, where we seek to be informative, inspirational, enlightening, and dynamic. But more importantly, we seek to be fair and balanced. There comes a time when the game tolerates no spectators, only players. There comes a time when we must recognize that our individual aspirations shape our collective destiny. There comes a time when getting in the game, despite the risks, despite the challenges, regardless of the cost, is simply the right thing to do. There comes a time when we must find our hearts, find our soul, and pursue our purpose for the greater good of all, for country, for humanity. There comes a time when we must manifest our true greatness. Yes, there comes a time, and that time is now. So let's get down to the essentials. The Essentials, serious radio for serious people committed to advancing the national conversation. And good evening and welcome to Guardian Radio FM. I'm your host, Hubert Edwards. And as usual, we are here to have ourselves a wonderful conversation. We have a guest waiting in the wings. We're going to discuss issues around investment, look at two separate countries, how they intertwine, what are the issues, what are the impact, and also kind of get an idea of this whole issue of entrepreneurship through the eyes of our guests. As usual, if you want to join in on the conversation, the numbers are 323-6232, 325-4316, 325-4259. Our text line is 422-4796. And so we are just going to get right into it. Our guest is there and waiting. And this evening, we are going to be speaking with no stranger to the Essentials. He has been here before, Mr. Howard Newton James. And you know, if anyone has a name with a middle name, Newton, right? That's kind of powerful guy. So we today have a powerful guest. He's a friend of mine, very good colleague. Go way back, all the way back to college. And, you know, over the last couple of years, you know, we've been bumping into each other in and out. We have had the opportunity to work on a few things with individuals from Jamaica and right here in the Bahamas, so working from the Jamaican side and working from the Bahamian side. And that has kind of, I think, at this point in interaction, kind of piqued our interest. I think we need to, you know, start to take a deeper look at, you know, what exactly is there? Where are the nexuses between Jamaica and the Bahamas? We know that at a high level, you know, where the big money runs, where the big investments are, there clearly are connections. But are there other opportunities maybe at a lower level? You know, not necessarily, you know, hundreds of thousands, could still be millions of dollars we're talking about. But are there opportunities, and should we be working more vibrantly, more assiduously to, you know, build on those connections, to build on those bridges? In the Bahamas, there's a very vibrant Jamaican diaspora. Jamaica is a hop, a skip, and a jump down south. There are great connections between two countries. And so we have to look to see where the opportunities. I believe that the region, the Caribbean region, in fact, its success, its future, really lies within the Caribbean and lies within greater cooperation, greater integration, greater collaboration and working together. And, you know, it's kind of that type of a conversation we're going to be having this evening and really looking at which, you know, impact decision-making around investment, how easy it is to find financing, so on and so forth. So our guest, Howard Newton James, is a graduate of University of Technology, as I am. He did business administration. Seemed like he's been following in my footsteps a little bit there. We did the same, and that's where we actually connect. He's a chartered accountant. Interesting. Professional experience, he has been kind of a serial investor, co-founded a number of organizations, at least some of those for him to discuss, has some deep experience with, manufacturing organization, Lascelles Limited, a big company out of Jamaica, Lascelles DeMarcado, company. He was there. He also spent some time with PricewaterhouseCoopers, now referred to as PwC. Number of interests in companies within Jamaica and in the United States, serve on a number of organization, professional and civic organizations. So we want to welcome back to The Essential, Mr. Howard Newton James, FCA. How are you doing, sir?
Doing good, man. Good. How are you doing, man?
All is well, all is well. The man from Marley Road, you know, if you have anything to do with Marley, then you must have some level of greatness in you, no?
Yeah, well, you know, of course, you know, we love and respect our future national hero, Bob Marley. So we all grew up, of course, you know, during Bob Marley, and was anybody who grew up during that time, you know, marrying Bob Marley while he was alive, and of course, his passing was a major event for us. In fact, I remember when Ziggy Marley came to play football. I think it was Cold Star Pepsi at Calabar High School, which was my alma mater. That was a major event, Ziggy Marley coming to play for, I think it was St. George's at the time. That was a major event at high school. Mm. It was almost like, you know, a national Premier League match, or, you know, Jamaica versus Brazil, mm-hmm. you know. So yes, Bob Marley Museum, which of course, you know, transformed from one of Bob Marley's residences, was just down the road from where I live. So yeah, you know, lots of fun memories of that.
So we are here this evening, Howard, to talk a little bit about investment and talk about connection between the two countries. You know, your country, Jamaica, and my countries, Jamaica and the Bahamas. So we're going to have that conversation. But before we get into that, just, you know, those persons who never heard you the first couple of times you were here, you know, just kind of reintroduce yourself to the Bahamian public. Who is Howard James? What does he do? What is he into? You know, why should I listen to you?
Yeah. Wow. Thanks. In a nutshell, maybe the shortest answer first and foremost, I'm a very inquisitive person. I've always been a very inquisitive person. Stumbled a few times along the way, but was able to rediscover myself maybe in my mid-20s, you know, finding my purpose. You know, I came through during the era when the whole society was changing. And I lost my way, you know, getting caught up into just about what every young boy in Kingston get caught up into, you know, let's call it vagrant behavior, you know. And in fact, I don't know if you're aware of this, that I came into high school as, let's call it a young academic prodigy. And I left high school with maybe just two subjects plus typing. Right. And, you know, just really, really lost my purpose, and a lot of things were going on. And I was able to rediscover, you know, my passion for academics, my passion for even my own existence and future. Mm-hmm. You know, I came into the accounting field by sheer, let's call it sheer luck, or just, you know, by accident, really. My passion has always been about entrepreneurship, from to do with my father, who was an entrepreneur himself. And he himself had some successes, but had some major failures. And I basically lived a big chunk of my life trying to rewrite some of the wrongs that he may have done, you know? Mm-hmm. And my mom was an accountant, incidentally, and I swore blind I would never be an accountant, yeah. Right? And in fact, over the years, she would beg me to come out of the accounting profession. Right?
I can understand your mom doing that.
Yeah, but I stumbled into accounting because when you go into the business stream, into college, you have a couple of choices. And I recognize that most of the CEOs and the Fortune 500 companies and so on were either chartered accountants or former accountants, mm. right? structure. And I felt that in order for me to develop myself as a business or businessman or entrepreneur, I wanted to go into the belly of accounts. So I ended up on an audit firm by sheer chance. Didn't really set out to go to an audit firm. Ended up there and said, all right, if I'm going to learn accounting, I have to go to the factory. And the factory for accounting is an audit firm, right? And I stayed there and said, all right, well, if I stay here, it's best I become a chartered accountant, because that would definitely help me, almost like my insurance policy, and also give me a wealth of knowledge to then be able to manage my own entities going forward. I actually spent 10 years in external audit, went over to Lasses Demarcada, which is now Campari Group, which of course is the owner of Rare Nebbio and the Appleton brands and so on. Right, I went there and became the group internal audit assistant manager. That in itself is a story that could maybe take us an hour or two, right? But I really enjoyed those experiences because it really enabled me to have an understanding and appreciation for the different types of businesses, the different types of management and leadership styles, the different types of, let's call it variables that you have to be intimately aware of in order to successfully run business, right? Mm-hmm. So I would have gone through, when I left internal audit, I was seconded to a number of companies. Primarily, I always use the term, they maybe called me Mr. Fix-It. Wherever there was a problem within the group, they would send Howard James there to try and fix whatever problems that existed. Mm-hmm. And when I say whatever problems, I mean, if it is a security issue, operational issue, a storage issue, an IT problem, an accounting problem, manufacturing problem, whatever it was, I would have to discover what were the challenges and basically chart a way to make the company, you know, turn around to be more sustainably successful. Mm-hmm. Right? And then, there are a couple of big stories, get into too much detail about that, only to say that helped me to utilize this inquisitive nature to be able to solve problems that were somewhat outside of my formal studies, right? But because I read extensively, I consume a lot of business material, right? It enabled me to look at problems. And of course, I have an entrepreneurial mind. So I'm always going into situations, not as an accountant, but as an entrepreneur. So that basically helped me to separate myself from a typical accountant, right? So anytime somebody calls me an accountant or seeks accounting advice from me, I try to steer them in a different direction, because I consider myself not to be an accountant, but someone who has used accounting to enable himself to basically, let's call it self-actualize in business. Yeah. Right?
Bourgeois accountant.
So, pardon? Go again?
A bourgeois accountant.
Come on.
trying to separate yourself from us ordinary folks. Okay, that's fine. But no, you are you are currently a director business consultant in your own company, Capacity Concepts Limited. And just glancing through your resume, your bio, you know, after the great stability of 10 years at PricewaterhouseCoopers, PwC, right? You just didn't seem to stay any place too long. And there was a time in life when people would look at your resume and say, boy, this man is a waste of time. He's just always moving. What is, if any, the value of, you know, accumulating not necessarily long, long periods, but reasonable periods of time in these multiple areas that you've been?
Right. Every move that I have made in my professional career, I would say, has been deliberate. Right? And most of the companies that I would have gone to are companies that I was seconded by the Lasses Demarcada Group. Right. So if you see Federated Pharmaceutical or Plastic Containers or Lasses Limited, they're all part of the Rare Nebbio Group, and there are companies that I was seconded to basically help them solve their problems. I give one quick thing just because it is somewhat history and somewhat public knowledge. Right. When I went to Federated Pharmaceutical, it was being considered for closure. Right. Federated Pharmaceutical at that time was maybe a 50-year-old company, and the Lasses Group, now Campari Group, was considering closing that unless somebody could come up with a plan to save it. Right. Mm-hmm. Myself and a team eked out a strategy to basically redevelop that company, put it to the board, and they were able to $100 million at the time to redevelop it. And that was a very proud moment for me, because Federated Farmers Group has some very powerful brands, DPH, Magnum is the farmer, I can't remember the name of the ingredient right now. But you know, sit with me, I'm getting up in age. But we were able to not only save that company, but they went on to sell that company to another entity in Jamaica for about $3.8 billion,
mm-hmm.
right? A lot of that experience, as I said, you know, not necessarily jumping around, but it's places that I was placed because of the skill set that they identified in me.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, I wanted to be exposed to, in fact, every time I'm approached within the group and say, oh, I have an accounting job here or a group FCR or whatever, I tell them I'm not interested. I want something that is more operational, more general management related, because I wanted to be exposed to leadership in an organization at the highest level,
mm-hmm.
so that I could gain that experience to then later on in life, you know, use it for my own endeavors, you know. So, you know, I can't say that there's any engagement that I've taken on because I went from something and jumped over to something else. It was very, very deliberate, because as I said, from my earliest memory, from about 4 years old, I've always only wanted to be an entrepreneur. Right? I wanted to have my own business,
uh-huh.
but I recognized that it was important for me to learn from the best. Right? When I look in my boardroom, you know, you have some of the real big stalwarts in the country who are my directors. I'm reporting to them and I'm learning from them. I'm basically lapping up every word they say, because I know that it's going to be important sometime in the future.
Yeah. And you know, I find interesting that these people would go to school, study accounts, then spend, you know, hundreds of years doing ACCA. And then all of a sudden they come out and decide, well, I don't want to be an accountant. Like, you know, what's up with that? It's a really, really, really interesting thing. Unfortunately, I think I stumbled in the same group. and, you know, but, you know, like you, I just never, ever could get my head wrapped around being an accountant. As in being a financial controller day to day. It just something about it. I really, as you indicated, prefer to be, you know, let me understand the operational side. Let me understand the risk management issues here. Let me understand what the strategic planning is, the process. You know, what is it that we're looking to do? What are you looking to, you know, how are you looking to expand? How are you planning this process? What are the pros and cons of whatever it is that you're going? Put this on a table and do a tabletop assessment, you know, after you crunch out the numbers, of course, and they kind of make sense. And really bite into it and say, you know, this feels right, this will work, or as you indicated with a company which you went to, you know, there's an issue here, there's an operational issue, whether it is a failure in risk management, some failure in some internal control, is it some issues with the corporate governance, the board isn't functioning well, yeah. things like those. When you get into that type of thing, I think it gets your blood rushing a little bit more than, you know, no disrespect to my accountant brothers and sisters, but I think it gets your blood rushing just a little bit more.
Quite so. And I take my hats to accountants any day of the week, because
for sure
it takes a particular mentality to be able to be sated by looking at numbers. And I must say, during that whole process, I gained a whole lot of satisfaction from numbers, but from a different perspective.
Yes.
Right? From early up in the game in being an external audit, I knew that numbers told a story. Mm-hmm. And I love to tell stories, and I love to understand stories and enjoy stories. So if I see two numbers together, they mean something. One number by itself, it might mean something else. You know, three numbers is a, you know, and so on. And when you put all of those stories together, right, it tells you something about this business. And if there's anything that I would say, I would, you know, call myself out and say, Howard, I think you're good at this, right? As you know, Bertie, I'm a very humble guy, right? But if there's anything that I say, Howard, you're good at this, I can walk into a company, walk through the front door, and maybe give you a full assessment of that company within 5 minutes, right? Because a lot of things tell a story,
Yes.
Right? Just how you're greeted, just the image on the wall, just how processes work, how long they take, and so on, right? It tells you something about the organization. And being able to make that assessment pretty early is not something that you discover overnight. You have to go through a process. And that process of going through the external audit, that 10-year experience in external audit, is invaluable. Mm-hmm. I would not be the person I am today without being in external audit at Pricewaterhouse. Of course, you know, being exposed to multiple large, small, medium entities in various industries and so on, I wouldn't be able to do a lot of the things that I do today without that experience. However, my ambitions were great, or I should say wider, mm-hmm. wider than just limiting it to just accounting, right? I wanted to understand business. So to this day, I consume maybe 80% of all entertainment or material that I consume is business related, because I find that exciting. In the same way I might find that exciting, some accountants are totally boring.
Yeah, and that's the truth. You know, recently I had a conversation with a good friend of mine. We happened to have had some sort of a crossing with the same people, right? And my interaction with that group was very brief, maybe about an hour and a half to two maximum. We talked about many things in terms of stuff that they were doing. When my friend spoke to me on these same persons, I said something to my friend, you know, a conclusion, and the friend says, "You hit it right in the head." And it's interesting that, you know, we're from totally different background, and you know, we never spoke about this particular organization or ever was in the same space discussing the same things, but we draw the same conclusion, and that conclusion came from possibly the person had a deeper understanding, been around longer. But like you said, sometimes just a narrow window is enough for you to get in and ask the right questions and kind of pry just below the surface. Some things which might miss the numbers line up. The numbers tell a story, but also the stories tell a story, because, you know, the story that you start out with, right, followed by another, the keen ear. And I think this is one of the things we are trained to do as when we are in auditing, to listen very carefully, because when things are not gelling, or at least, you know, especially when they are kind of conflicting, these things jump out at you and they start to tell you whether or not the persons who are speaking with you have a true understanding, a full grasp of exactly what it is they're saying. As a matter of fact, whether or not they're giving you the true story. And so, you know, this is where I believe the, you know, and to maybe accountants out there who are listening, especially young persons who are going into the field and may feel, well, you know, I am doing the accounting route because of some reason. Like for myself, the reason I got into accounting is because it was simply the cheapest thing to do. It was the only thing that my parents could afford at the time. And so I went the accounting route. It wasn't something that I was really crazy about, but I can say this to you. It is a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful era to be in. And in that space, the opportunities, the permutations of things that you can do is just simply unlimited. So, you know, if you have some sort of, you know, like, you know, I'm tentative about this, go ahead. It's a marvelous thing to do. And the truth is, when you become an accountant, it lays a foundation, anything else other than like doctors or you know, scientific thing. So, Howard, let's we have a good feel of who you are. What is it that you do mostly now at this point in time? We know you are an entrepreneur, but, you know, in terms of working with persons in your consulting capacity, what is it that you do most?
In a nutshell, I help people solve problems. Whatever their problems are, I help them to solve them, right? So, someone will come with, let's call it, they have a leadership challenge or a management challenge. They have an operational challenge. Maybe their IT system is not working as they would like it to be, or they want something more efficient and so on. Or they have a shortage, a cash flow shortage, need some funding, whatever. I try to help them solve whichever problems they have, right? So maybe my biggest, you know, if I am, I wouldn't call myself an expert in any one area, right? You know, for whatever negative connotation this may have, I'm a jack of all trades, right? The one skill set that I think I possess is being able to identify clearly what clients' problems are and find the suitable expertise to help them with those challenges, right?
You're not really a jack of all trades. It's not like you're going into an organization and say, I can fix the IT, I can fix the running water, I can fix the electricity. Yeah. No, you recognize that you have a sphere within which you work where you have the ability, the capability, the competence to sit down with persons, to talk, to examine, to interview, whatsoever it is that you do, and identify the main issues, and then go source the persons who can solve the problems.
Yes. And some of them I can help them solve myself.
Yes.
Right? So I have had, there are some that I would say I would consider myself somewhat of an expert in. And one of them is inventory management, right? It's a kind of funny story, but I'll segue to this to say, when you are a male when we were in an audit firm, if you're a male and you drive, 99 out of 100, you're going to go on that stock out. You're going to go on that stock out, right? Because more than likely it's out of town or somewhere remote. It's going to be in a rough environment and the ladies do not want to go anywhere near it. So you're going to go. And for whatever reason, I found it fascinating because I recognized that by interacting with, let's call it the nucleus of the entity, especially if it's a trading computer or something like that, right, which it typically is manufacturing, whatever, right, inventory is going to be at the nucleus of that operation, right? If they don't have inventory, they don't have a business. And I recognize that there are multiple tentacles to inventory management, right? It's not just account, right? There are multiple things that impact and influence whether the count is either accurate or whether the business is able to manage itself well or be managed well, right? So I was able to, you know, let's call it glean or obtain a lot of knowledge from those stock counts, right? And dive into the belly of inventory management. So much so I started lecturing or teaching inventory management to a number of the entities that I've consulted with, right? So if there's an inventory problem, chances are I have come across your problem at some point during my journey, right? So, you know, when somebody would come in and say, try to figure it out, I mean, areas pretty quickly, right? Because of course, you know, I've counted eggs, I've counted manure, I've counted bauxite, I've counted pharmaceuticals, you name it, I've counted it. I've counted chicken, I've counted pigs, cows, you name it, I've counted it, right? I've been in cold storage, counting meat, you name it. As I said, you name it, I've counted it. Nails, hammer, whatever, right? I've been in those environments. So I'm able to help clients with that problem in particular. Accounting, I don't have that kind of passion, so I typically find somebody who has that kind of passion for accounting to help clients solve their accounting problems, right? There are some other things. I'm not a, let's call it, experienced tech guy or IT guy, but have an appreciation for IT. I try to stay on top of what is current and have an appreciation. So the jargons and terms are being used and SQL and whatever else jargons are being used. And of course, now in the AI age, you have to have a great appreciation for a number of things. And I typically say that I know a little about a lot.
Okay.
You have to know a little about a lot, especially if you're a business consultant. Right. A lot of if everything flies over your head, you're not gonna be of great value to your client in stuff and thing. But I try to basically be aware of a number of stuff. So when I'm having conversations with persons who are having challenges and able to at least have an informed discussion with them about it and go away knowing clearly what kind of support they're gonna need.
Definitely. And so we are having this conversation with Mr. Howard Newton James, not Isaac Newton.
Can I say that? My parents have gifted me life, but I think the greatest thing they gifted me, and I really don't care what anybody else thinks, right? I think Howard Newton James is the greatest gift that my parents gave me, right? Somehow, maybe my mother, I think it's maybe my mother who felt that I was going to be some young genius, right?
Mm-hmm.
And gave me the middle name, Newton. I absolutely love my middle name. So and most times I go around and I tell people, you know, I'm Howard James, and then I say I'm Howard Newton James. And you can see the look on their faces, and I love it, you know, because I'm in love with my name and the fact that I was gifted that name. Mind you, I am also a very Afrocentric, right? I'm very in touch with my African roots, right? And this is a straight up British or Scottish name.
We understand that, Newton. You're very much in touch with your African name, Newton.
Yes. In fact, my daughter, you know, who was 12.45.
Yeah.
I was deliberate about giving her African name, about ensuring that her names, except the James, I could have done something about that, but maybe, you know, maybe there's still time. But I ensure that her first name was an African name. I ensure that her middle names were things that were near and dear to me. So one of her name is a very popular poet, Maya Angelou.
Mm-hmm.
So her middle name is Maya. And her second middle name, because I've always been jealous of people who have two middle names, right? So that's some vanity right there, right? Her second middle name is Sade, who is my absolute favorite female singer of all time.
Okay.
Right. And of course, her first name is Nala, N-A-L-A. Mm-hmm. And that means successful, right? It's a Swahili name, mm-hmm. right? That means successful. And it's just by a sheer coincidence that it's also the name of the female lion in Lion King.
Okay, just a little bit of measure of redemption he does, kind of, you know, put it to the next generation. But yes, we are here having this conversation with Newton, and he's outlining, you know, kind of the background as to how these things actually work. I think it's important for us to understand that when you have there are things and there are persons out there who can assess. I have had the experience, I have had the pleasure, sometimes not always nice pleasure, to have gone into an organization and to kind of help, you know, turn things over and make recommendations. And one of the biggest thing that I find with some of these circumstances is not the process of actually doing that. It's a process of persons accepting the recommendation,
yes.
recognizing and just
yes.
humbling themselves to the fact that what we're doing here is not necessarily wrong, but can be improved. And when that doesn't happen, you know, it becomes a bigger issue because, you know, from a risk management point of view, and I do a bit of risk management, once I see that start to happen, the biggest word that started to jump and bob around in my mind is culture. And once the culture is gone, it doesn't matter what type of strategy you come up with, because culture eats strategy for lunch every single time. We're going to take ourselves a break here, and when we come back, yeah. we are going to kind of switch the conversation. We want to talk a little bit about the investment climate in Jamaica, share some of what's happening here in the Bahamas, and ask about, you know, some of the work that you have been doing in terms of trying to facilitate funding for different for various investment around the country in Jamaica. And of course, as I indicated at the beginning, we have worked on one or two here in the Bahamas. So we take this break, and when we come back, we continue our conversation. James, out of Jamaica,
right.
a business consultant and a former accountant. Don't move. Come right back.
Beulah gal, can you believe this? We are now the patrol queens of the neighborhood.
We now large and in charge. So we need to check out what's going on in everybody's yard. What about that gun that we know that Junior and his homeboys just ran out? Can we report that too?
Of course we can.
But we could be in deep trouble if they find out.
We need to report what we see, Beulah. When you call Crime Stoppers, they just answer your call in Miami.
So then we can report everything? Guns, where they hiding the drugs, who shoot who part of which gang, or who disturbing the peace with the loud music and the motorcycles.
Then our neighborhood will be the best in the Bahamas, and everybody gonna want to come live here. And then our house price will go up, gal.
So what we waiting on? What's the number?
If you see something, say something. Let us all pitch in and stop the crime before it's your time. Call 328-8477 from Nassau or 242-300-8477 from the Family Islands. Or text us through the Crack Crime Bahamas app. Stop the crime before it's your time.
Next Level Solutions.
Next Level Solutions. Solutions. At Next Level Solutions, we assist companies and organizations to understand and strategic governance, risk, compliance, regulatory, finance, and operational challenges, maximize their performance and grow. Next Level Solutions, a dynamic consultancy built on experiential knowledge. For further details on our service offerings, visit nlsolutionsbahamas.com or call 376-8951. Next Level Solutions, practical solutions delivered.
I'm not settling. So many did before me. I'm not settling.
Yeah, Sam, I think the song that we had lined up, you know. But as you know, if you listen to us on a regular basis, that would be Mr. Clark, and he's saying we are not settling. And that's the whole idea here. We are not just settling for the regular conversations. We are not settling for the regular outlook. We are not settling for the regular level of achievements or dreaming. You know, we want to do it a little bit bigger. We want to do it a little bit broader. We want to be in a place where we can gather, bring ideas together, bring listeners together, and, you know, really sell this thought that, you know, together we can do great things. We can do big things. Okay, let me not say that this way. But I have had conversations where persons kind of from one side or the next really diminish the value that one side or the next can gain from one side or the next. And it's something which has always bothered me. You know, as an individual who follows a little bit of history, I'm always upset with the people who, attempted the Federation, with the people who run CARICOM, with the persons who talk about Caribbean integration and do absolutely nothing about it for the most part. I am totally convinced that the quality of knowledge, the quality of competence and capability which is in the Caribbean, the type of resources and the opportunities which are available, we're not fully feeling and eking out the benefit of that because we have become too insular. We have become too patriotic, too much focus on national interests only. And I'm not saying that these things are not important. You must take care of your national interests. You must be patriotic. But at some point in time, we have to now start to understand that there is a bigger existence for us than any one individual country or small group of countries can. And I really believe that is where we have not fully exploit opportunities which are there. And this is kind of in a broad way, maybe at a higher level, 30,000 feet, looking at it, is the conversation we're trying to have and the direction we are going to shift. So my question to you, Howard, is what is the investment opportunities or the investment climate in Jamaica looking like at this point in time?
Before I go there, Yuri is a very, very important point in your preamble. And it speaks about the need for us as small island states see ourselves more as a group of entities through CARICOM or whatever, and whole conversation about the Federation and whether we should have a Federation, etc., comes to mind. You know, I became politically aware from maybe as early as 1977. I would have been 7 years old at the time, and for those mathematicians who can do quick math, will guess my age now. Right, we would have had those conversations prior to my birth about us being more unified as small island states through the Federation. And the whole conversation around the patriotism is actually something that Marcus Garvey himself would have, opined upon, right? It just so happens that, a quick segue is that my daughter swears blind that I resemble Marcus Garvey. Right? And Marcus Garvey happens to be her favorite national hero, happens to be Jamaica's first national hero, and is the national hero that I revere the most. Right, I would maybe phrase it as maybe one of, if not the most important national figure or important human being since Jesus Christ walked this earth. Right, I'll go as far as saying that, but of course that's just my opinion. Right, so having said that, I think we have made some attempts through CARICOM and of course through the creation of the University of the West Indies and a few other stuff, the West Indies cricket team, but less we say about the better right now, right? As a bruised and battered West Indies, former and West Indies cricket team supporter, right? We somewhat have been missing the boat, and we are not seeing ourselves in the way that we should see ourselves along the lines of the European Union, right? And also in the way that maybe Africa, the continent, should see itself as the African Union, which has its own challenges, right? Now, we are very small islands in a very small geographical area. And the less we see ourselves as a unified force, it's to our own detriment. And the more we fight against each other to try and eke out whatever economic gains we can have within this region, right? It's to our own detriment, right? So that's my take on that, right? Now, to get back to the question as to what the economic climate is in Jamaica, I'd maybe say in very, very strong, aggressive terms that the current economic climate in Jamaica is the best it has been since the 1960s. I'll pause there for impact. We know what happened in the 1970s with the political turmoil, socialism, etc. We know what happened during the 1980s, the reversal of a number of those programs, and the emphasis on capitalism and we know what happened during the 1990s with strict fiscal policies, etc. And we know what has happened since then, where both political parties have basically aligned somewhere in the middle, right? They have basically had a come to Jesus moment wherein, when I was going to say they, I mean both political parties, and a quick segue on that, just to basically express my own political views, right? I'm what you'd call maybe a centrist, wherein I embrace socialist policies, and I also embrace capitalist policies, wherever they make sense, right? Mm-hmm. And I have a major difficulty being a strong supporter of either political parties, but I support certain aspects of their policies, mm-hmm. right? So, and I'll leave that there.
Yeah, it's not right? about but reasonable.
If you
it's
ask
about
me
reasonable.
A question on that, I'm free to answer it, but I'll leave that there.
Yeah. We won't do that the same.
Right. So, because of course I have very radical views and so on, and I'm never shy to express myself, right? But having said that, the economic climate in Jamaica is as good as you would get it during independent Jamaica's history, right? There are a number of things that have aligned very well, have aligned very, very well for Jamaica. Now, of course, we would have gone very, very close to the edge of the cliff during the 1990s throughout the early 2000s, wherein our debt-to-GDP ratio
would
run about
960. Hold on. Yes. I think I need to slow you down. You mean Jamaica went over the cliff?
Yes, sir.
It did.
Yes, sir.
It did.
Yes, sir.
It did.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Thanks for the correction.
One of the reasons it's important to style things as they truly are is that in this process of discussing, you know, we want to impress upon other persons, as you look on historically as to what took place in Jamaica, and juxtapose that to what is happening now, as you indicated, Howard, this is the best it has been in independent Jamaica. But the truth is that Jamaica went over the cliff. And you said the two parties had a come to Jesus moment. I'm not sure it was a come to Jesus moment as opposed to a come to IMF moment. Yes. And that there in that arrangement with the IMF, I think there's some positive things which came out of it.
That became our Jesus.
So the IMF was the savior. All right, go ahead. Let's see.
So of course, the bullet, the gun was at our head as to which direction we go. Do we go further over the cliff, or do we refer some of the policies that we have had that has been creating these problems?
Mm-hmm.
In fact, the most stark reality check that I got was maybe about 20 years ago. I went to Dominican Republic, right? And I'm going to try and give you the very shortest summary of that experience.
Yep.
DR has a much more vibrant manufacturing sector, and just about maybe the tourism sector was just about catching fire, mm-hmm. right? And I went there, and we came to the airport, and the airport was the dingiest airport I've ever seen in my lifetime. It was in Punta Cana, and it was the dingiest airport I've ever seen. The ride from the airport to a hotel in Punta Cana, hotel was Excellence. It was the worst ride I've ever had in my lifetime. In fact, when we stopped, we had to stop at one point and jump in the back of a truck to navigate a pond to get to the hotel. And and I was like, what kind of country is this? Why is it so backward? And I reached the hotel, and I was like, pondering this thing and saying, Jamaica is so much more developed than this place, And then I remembered, or I inquired about the exchange rate between the DR currency and the US dollar. At the time, it was 20-something DR currency to US dollar. And at that time, I think it was about $80 to Jamaican to one US. And the realism hit me that Jamaica has developed itself at that time on pure debt.
Mm.
So we have borrowed money without having the economic resources to back our currency. And DR was much more patient with their development to say, we're going to be a little bit more patient. We're going to develop based on the economic growth of our economy, right? And that was like an eye-opener for me. Mm. Because, of course, in Jamaica, we like nice things, right? And we don't really care where the money come from, right? Whoever pocket it come from. And we don't care how much debt we get into, as long as things look nice, right? So, and we have had successive governments that have lived off debt and created this heavy debt to where it reached, I think it was 167% debt to GDP ratio. And the IMF stepped in and said, all right, if you borrow more, we're going to have to come in with some seriousness. The government at the time listened to the IMF. And successive governments since then have been very deliberate with, of course, the EPOC group, which is basically a group of businessmen who help to monitor the policies of the country or the policies of the government to ensure that they are in line with the IMF policies, etc., right, to create the kind of sustainable recovery, right? Basically an oversight committee. I think it's economic, whatever, oversight committee. I can't remember it right now, right? But it's EPOC. Anybody can Google that, right? So having gone through that whole process, we were forced to look at ourselves to say, all right, how do we get back from over the cliff to get in on the other side, right? And as a result of that, mind you, it hasn't been perfect. And mind you, it hasn't gone as far as we would have liked, because of course, politics is a popularity contest. And you have to be careful about some of the policies that you implement. Though it may be good for this long-term sustainability of the country, you have to be careful how it impacts the lives of the persons who will vote for you, right? Mm-hmm. So that's another matter, right? Which, of course, segues to why I'm not in politics, right? So we have had to, you know, gone through some severe pain to get to the point where we're no, I think we're about 80% debt-to-GDP ratio. Don't quote me on that. I'm not an economist. I'm not a political scientist either, right? But we have had to go through some really, really serious transformative processes to get to where we are, right? Having gone through that and having laid some serious foundation in terms of building infrastructure, creating a better business environment and making Jamaica open for business, a lot of benefits have spilled off, right? And of course, Jamaica is also a very, very big brand. Mm-hmm. Jamaica is a big brand. And anywhere you go in the world and mention Jamaica, it's a big brand. However, it's not as big a brand as it can be and as it should be, right? So we have to continue to press along this process to create even a greater, to become even a greater economic power within our region, and of course, have a greater presence throughout the world by not only looking at our nearshore markets, but looking at the world as our playground. And we haven't quite made a transition as much as we should have and could have, but I believe that where we are currently with the local landscape as it is, right, a lot of things have improved, the banking system, the improvements in how our governance is done, the improvements in and reduction in political violence and so on, right? I think Jamaica is poised for significant growth. You know, once you have an investor or somebody who is keen on understanding the culture and the local landscape and how they can make good or take advantage of opportunities that are here, right? And there are specific sectors that I believe personally that are ripe for growth. And there are also significant opportunities because the venture capitalist ecosystem is so underdeveloped, right? I also consult with
Before you get into that, just something I want to jump at something that you said. You know, they're good. There's some sectors which are kind of ripe for investment. Foreign direct investment, obviously, is always being encouraged and courted by governments right across the region. One of my consternation has always been, having settled here in the Bahamas and seeing potentially, access to capital, is the extent to which that capital isn't seeking more investments within the Caribbean region itself. The typical Bahamian money, I think, kind of stays within the Bahamas for the most part. But I really think that there's an opportunity for greater cross-border flows. We have seen in recent times a flow coming from Jamaica into the Bahamas for reasons maybe we will discuss a little bit later. But I am not aware of, I'm not saying that it isn't happening, but I'm not aware of the same level of movement from Jamaica, from the Bahamas into Jamaica. And I believe that there are, viable projects out there which, should be chased by people with money within the region.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Just by sheer size and the size of our country, Jamaica is and will continue to be for some time a very attractive investment opportunity if you have your eyes open and you're aware of what's happening on the ground in Jamaica. Right? I'll pick one sector. I'll pick two sectors, for example. I didn't mention earlier that Jamaica is a big brand. Mm-hmm. And wherever you place a Jamaican product or service, and when I say service, I'm specifically Jamaica, not at the level that they flock the Bahamas, right? By any stretch of the imagination. However, if there was a serious investor who had some desire in putting down some footprints in Jamaica, marketing Jamaica in the areas and locales that they believe they could market that product to. Let's just say that there's a whole lot or significant interest in the hospitality space in Jamaica, right?
Mm-hmm.
Selling Jamaica is, I think, pretty easy. Wherever you go, whichever corner of the earth you may go to try and sell Jamaica as a destination. Now, of course, by sheer proximity to the U.S. Bahamas, hands down, does a whole lot more, it has a whole lot more tourists than Jamaica. But Jamaica has not necessarily done, and I should say investors or business owners, hoteliers, et cetera, have not necessarily done a great job of marketing Jamaica to places that the opportunities exist. Yeah. Having said that, there's so much interest in hospitality in Jamaica currently,
mm-hmm.
coming out of COVID and disruption COVID created. And I wouldn't guess that we'll have another COVID anytime soon or anything like that anytime soon, or at least the response to COVID in the way that we did it the last time. I don't think that we'll have any response like that in the near future. sorry. However, I believe that hospitality in particular, just by the sheer brand of Jamaica, there are significant opportunities in that area.
Yeah.
Now, as to why Bahamians or Bahamian investors don't see Jamaica as a lucrative investment opportunity, it baffles me. It baffles me. The only explanation I could come up with is maybe they can find opportunities in mainland USA that may, let's call it, compete with their investments.
Yeah, but you
right? There are a couple of things that persons will take into consideration.
Yeah, I'm saying if you looking at as to why an investor may or may not, right? Then one of the starting points have to be the vagary of the currency, the floating. Jamaica has a floating currency.
Which
the currency
is exactly what I was going to.
Yeah,
gonna
the currency
touch on,
is weak.
Right? That was my next point.
Go ahead.
Well, it is weak. However, it has been stable for the better. I would maybe say the better part of 5 to 10 years,
mm-hmm.
right? And it is stable because of the same issue, the question point we had earlier, about the seriousness of successive governments and also the intervention of the private sector to ensuring that there is strict monetary policy and adherence to strict monetary policy, and also with the intervention of the IMF and adhering to the strict confines of whatever IMF agreements that we're on. Right? Now, in the past, prior to maybe 10 years ago, maybe a little bit more than that, successive governments have not necessarily paid too much attention to whatever confines are prescribed of the IMF, et cetera. They're basically trying to buy themselves out of a bad situation and basically providing people with things that they think would satisfy the persons to ensure that they get votes.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Now, there's a much more serious and deliberate effort to ensure that the economy remains stable and has been stable for at least 10 years. Right? Now, of course,
but Howard, before you go though, one of the things, and this has been a cry of mine from just observing the committee you mentioned. I can't remember the name either, but one of their mantra was I think it was 5 and 4 or 4 and 5. That was trying to get to either 5% growth or 4% growth. Never happened.
It was a pipe dream then, and it's still a pipe dream.
It's still a pipe dream. If you draw that conclusion, my issue with this is simply that the much boasted about, maybe I shouldn't use the word boast, but the much celebrated 20, 25 consecutive quarters of surpluses, right? That must have come at a price of something, not easily seen, not readily seen. And I suspect that it is on the back of the ordinary taxpayer.
Right, 100%. But at the same time, you have to keep in mind, and of course, when it comes to these kind of discussions, it gets really complicated.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But keep in mind that remittances, whichever side of the coin you want to look at it and whichever angle you want to approach it from, is a major contributor to the Jamaican economy, right? So we are basically exporting people to send back money to Jamaica, right? Which is not ideal, right? However, it is part of our reality, mm-hmm. right? So we're in, you maybe have multiple countries, some of them first world countries, Greece, Italy, etc., that may suffer during times when the economy may slow down. Jamaicans in the diaspora send back money to Jamaica to prop up Jamaica, mm-hmm. right? So we may not face the level of hardships that persons in other jurisdictions may face, right? So as much as you may not see the level of growth in the formal economy, or at least consider the underground or informal economy, which is something that I would say there's no economist in Jamaica that can give you a fair estimate as to what is the size of the informal economy, or at least be brave enough to definitively state what it is, because it is massive,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
So although you may see low growth in the formal economy, you're going to at some point have to consider what is happening in the informal or underground economy. And of course, that is a wide spectrum.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, that's...
if you're underground, to be honest, if you, like yourself, you know, we are trading in accounts, right? We are not, I am not an economist, but I think you're closer to it than I, right? However, you look at the fundamentals of the economy, you're saying, what exactly is taking place? Because you're looking at the assets that people have, the cars, the houses, the whatever, the businesses, whatever they have, the boats, the whatever. And you're saying this is not aligning with what the formal economy is saying.
Mm.
So something is happening underground that is not being accounted for, right? And because in Jamaica, cash is king, right? Mm. There are a lot of cash transactions that are still taking place, irrespective of whatever policies that may be implemented by the Bank of Jamaica, et cetera. Right. You know, as you may know, I mean, I myself and two partners through our entity operate a restaurant in downtown Kingston waterfront called Ocean 7. And cash is king here too. Right. Most of our transactions, more than half, are in cash.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Though, you know, we try and encourage persons to use debit or credit cards. Right. So there is a major underground economy. However they get their cash. Right, I'm not here to determine how they get the cash, but let's say they get it through legitimate means. There's something that is happening here that is not being captured in the formal economy. That is one. Two, what other opportunities there are outside of what I would have mentioned earlier in hospitality, etc., real estate, and so on. And you look at some of the major entities, the SEPRA, the Grace Kennedy, etc., and you try to figure out, how are they positioning themselves to take advantage of the fact that they are Jamaican and they are trying to eke out their space in the global space? And they would basically say to you, we want 60 or 70% of our revenue to come from exports,
mm.
right? And they're doing that on the back of being a Jamaican company.
Yeah, so they're leveraging the brand to break into international markets.
Yes.
Yeah, I think that's, you know, it that's important. I've advocated this before, and I think let me try and remember the brand. I think it's a sauce company. They sell jerk sauce and so on and so forth. I believe that the Bahamas needs to make a deliberate effort of having a couple of brands which are internationally known. You know, be on international market shelves, because there's a level of goodwill which flows back in terms of the country when persons kind of, you know, recognize your brand in an international way. Now, okay, so we kind of look broadly at some of the opportunities. I don't think you would have completed in going into the sector, but time is not our best friend right here. But I want to get into, and we need to take a break now, but when we come back, right, we want to kind of finish up the areas which you may see the opportunities, and then we want to get into the ecosystem for funding in the Bahamas, and maybe, you know, whether this nexus that we see mostly flowing from Jamaica to the Bahamas is part and parcel of that ecosystem, and how that ecosystem can be expanded and be leveraged more by local Bahamians or local Jamaican companies. You listen to The Essentials. We are having a conversation with our James. He is a business consultant and he's a serial investor, an individual with great experience background in the accounting field, even though he ran away from it. But as you would have heard, knowledgeable about what's happening in Jamaica, what's happening underground, and sharing some of these thoughts, because we want to have these conversations with a view that maybe somebody else is out there and thinking and listening, like, you know, why we have breezes here and why we have sandals. I'm not saying that they shouldn't be here, but why we don't have a Bahamian hotel in Jamaica. Something to think about. You listen to The Essentials. Don't move. Come right back.
With the best for all your printing needs, there ain't no one better, no. For posters and banners, magazines and flyers, for window decals, greeting cards and newsletters. No job too big and there's no job too small. You name it, we can print it, just give us a call. Let Printmasters bring your masterpiece to life.
Located in the Nassau Guardian Building, telephone 302-2361.
Next Level Solutions.
Next Level Solutions. At Next Level Solutions, we assist companies and organizations to understand and strategic governance, risk, compliance, regulatory, finance, and operational challenges, maximize their performance and grow. Next Level Solutions, a dynamic consultancy built on experiential knowledge. For further details on our service offerings, visit nlsolutionsbahamas.com or call 376-8951. Next Level Solutions. Practical solutions delivered.
This is Guardian Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news, intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversation. 96.9 FM.
My rights away, the faster I will run. You can deny me, you can decide to turn your face away. No matter, 'cause there's something inside so strong.
And welcome back to The Essentials, The Reset. We're having a conversation talking about things in Jamaica, things here in the Bahamas, looking at the investment climate in Jamaica, taking a little bit of a historical look as to, you know, what happened, how we get to this point, and some of the benefits which have flowed from that. Our guest is Mr. Howard Newton James. He is a business consultant and entrepreneur, chartered accountant out of Jamaica. And he's been here before. We have had conversations, been a while though. And so this is a bit of a, reigniting that kind of a series that we had way back, you know. So you're going to hear more about him, well, or hear more from him, more of him, as we seek to, you know, forge, closer relationships, because there's the diplomatic way, there's a government to government, but all of us have to play a part or have a part that we can play. So we can do The Essentials to the guests in Jamaica, the guests in Barbados, in Trinidad, and so on and so forth, because we want to understand what the Caribbean is. And we also want to provide a window through which the Caribbean can look into where the opportunities are. So I would, the other areas of interest where the investment may lie. And then let's get into the funding ecosystem, because I think, that's kind of the important thing. At the end of the day, if you can't fund it, if you can't find the money to fund it, if you don't have the capital, nothing happens.
Yes, quite so. So, as I mentioned earlier, Jamaica is not only open for business, it is ripe for business. Mm. Now, I don't know the Bahamian landscape as well as you do. I would have had my first and only visit to the Bahamas last summer, right? And that was a major eye-opener for me. Major. As a Jamaican visiting the Bahamas, of course, you know, I'd have traveled to a few countries, first world and otherwise, you know, during my time on this planet. And what struck me significantly was, you know, and of course, and I'm saying this from a Jamaican perspective, which may not even mirror your perspective, right? From a Jamaican perspective, Bahamas is, by my estimation, much more developed and organized than Jamaica,
mm-hmm.
right? I think, of course, my view that Bahamas being, let's call it, so close to the U.S., heavily influenced by the U.S. landscape and the U.S. culture, etc., you have found a way, the Bahamian people, to organize yourself, you know, maybe not to the level that maybe Bahamians would be happy with, right? But you have been able to organize yourselves in a way that creates an economy and creates a society that is much more, let's call it, organized and business, to some extent, business friendly or people friendly, right?
More affluent.
Jamaica tends to be a little bit of a rougher environment. But having said that, Jamaica, of course, has close to 3 million people, about 2.8 million people last count. Not only that, we are all Caribbean people. We, for the most part, are from the same place, right? Somewhere in Africa. And we have to be more deliberate about creating a better, more wholesome Caribbean before it just being an economy or a society that looks at opportunities outside of the region. The more we are deliberate about creating a better Caribbean or the better Caribbean individual, it will abound to our advantage.
Right?
Mm-hmm. Now, Jamaica, of course, is a... by any stretch of the imagination, it is still a small society. And, however, Trinidad, for example, has seen the Caribbean as its playground. And Trinidad has gained significant benefit from organizing itself deliberately about being, around being a powerhouse in the Caribbean. And by setting its roots here in the Caribbean, it is able to leverage that across the world.
And what you speak to is the fact that, for example, if you look across the Jamaican landscape, a number of significant entities, a number of the significant companies are actually owned by Trinidad shareholders or Trinidad concerns, yeah?
Absolutely, yes. Absolutely. And they are gaining significant benefit from doing so.
Mm-hmm.
Because, of course, you have to think about a number of things, right? The mere fact that I started by saying we're from the same place, we understand the unique taste profile, palettes, culture, etc. of Caribbean people. If you use the music with the soca music is big in Jamaica, as reggae music and dancehall is big across the Caribbean, right? So we don't talk enough about music as an investment opportunity. Because, of course, generally investors are afraid of investments in music and culture, right? And the creative space, right? However, Trinidad has gained so much advantage from investing throughout the region, and in particular Jamaica. They recognize that there's a market to be tapped in here. And if you go on the shelf, especially if you go in the snack aisles, etc., more than 50% of all products in the snack aisle is from Trinidad. Most mm-hmm. of the products that are in the drinks aisle, like sodas, etc., are from Trinidad. Now, what is preventing other entities from Victoria, wherever it is, for them to take advantage of the opportunities within the region. And of course, find a way to consolidate our resources to be a more unified force across the world in terms of exporting our culture and our food and our whatever it is, because people come to these countries to experience what we have.
Mm-hmm.
And having come here and experienced what we have, why don't we have it available for them when they get back home?
Yeah, but the regular guy in the Bahamas would say to you, right, and you know, the entrepreneurial spirit in the Bahamas is significant. It's high. In Jamaica, we call it hustling. Here,
yes.
This you see some element of hustling starting to creep into the whole arena. But generally speaking, the entrepreneurial spirit is high. But the guy is going to say to you, I can't fund it. I have an opportunity to do a $1 million project or a $750,000 or a $2 million project, but I can't fund it because the funding ecosystem is kind of skewed to the big man, so to speak, to the big businesses, to the entities where, you know, two slap on and, you know, a drink and it's done. We're not quite like that, but you understand what I'm saying, right? How is the ecosystem in Jamaica in terms of funding working, and how do you see potentially, some type of integration across borders? How do one country help the other?
In a punchline, it's difficult.
Mm-hmm.
It's really, really tough, right? And I'm a straight shooter, right? I try not to put too much fluff or adornment on tough topics like this, right? And I'll give you in a story, right? We are still suffering from the slave experience. We're still suffering from it. And I'll give you an example. Some years ago, I had a startup, which was a microlender, had a conversation with a potential funder. And myself and my other two partners were, you know, regular African, Jamaicans of African descent. And what the person said to us, who was also of African descent, Jamaican, significant player in the Caribbean at the time, and he said to us, you know, what? And this might have been in any other conversation, it might be considered tongue-in-cheek, you know, somebody making a quick jab. And he said, you know, what you guys need is, you need a white guy on your board. You have a good product. You have demonstrated that your company will do well,
mm-hmm.
and you're poised for growth, etc. You know, you need a white guy on your board, right? No,
it's just reality, man.
It's just the reality of it. And no, you know, when you step into a boardroom, even to this day in Jamaica, you know, and so depending on who you speak to, and this is a very tough conversation to have, even privately, much less publicly.
Yeah.
We are still suffering from the fact that Afro-Caribbeans are not revered and regarded in business as they should be. Now, is that an accurate or appropriate perception to form? It may be or maybe not. Right?
Well,
because
is it?
Of course.
I mean, at this stage, we don't want to say it maybe or it maybe not, but is it? I don't think so. I don't think it's an
right.
appropriate
no,
position.
And why I said it that way is depending on who you speak to. Because if you are in the trenches like I am, and when I say I'm in the trenches, right, I come across multiple businesses, startups, acceleration stage, scale-up stage, whatever it is. And these are businesses, I did indicate to you earlier that one of maybe my superpowers is to look at a business and have a pretty early appreciation for whether this business is something that may be able to do well.
Mm-hmm.
Or what are the challenges in this organization and it preventing it from maybe scaling or
right.
something that they will need to scale or whatever, right? So we look at a number of organizations, right, on a daily basis, weekly, monthly, whatever frequency. And we recognize that there, mind you, it's not as developed as a Silicon Valley or wherever it is. However, there are multiple opportunities for businesses here in Jamaica and, of course, throughout the Caribbean that with the right type of investor could do well globally, right? However, a lot of business takes place with, as I said earlier, a handshake or a slap of hands or a bump of fists. And it is just based on the fact that these people know each other, or they grew up together, their families know each other, etc. Not based on the fact that business has good fundamentals, right? So we have to be much more deliberate, which is why it's important for us to start to have these kinds of conversations. Say, how do we deliberately organize ourselves to ensure that businesses with good potential get the funds and funding that they need? Right. That's one side of the conversation. The next side of the conversation is the persons with the means, the funding, how will they fund these entities and what do they want in return? Typically, what you will find is that the person with the funds is typically somebody who is not of African or Afro-Caribbean descent, and they will make demands that may not be conducive or it may be the best interest of the business owner. Mm-hmm. And therefore, the funding conversations become very, very difficult. I myself have had those challenges. My clients have had those challenges. Now, you said, how do we create that ecosystem? We have to be very deliberate about it, right? Now, do we have businesses that have good growth potential? Absolutely. Do we have people who have the means to invest in these companies to unearth that potential? We do. However, sometimes, of course, the blame can be cast on the business owner to present a case that makes it irresistible for a funder or an investor to invest in. Right? There are certain things that they're shy about and scared of. The music industry, as I indicated earlier, the movie industry is another, interestingly, and which I found out recently, the restaurant industry is not necessarily attractive to most investors / financial houses, right? However, what we have to do is to be deliberate about creating these, starting these conversations wherein an investor who is seeking an opportunity, whether it is in Jamaica or Bahamas, to be able to create or have a vehicle through which they can start to invest within the Caribbean and create those entities that have great market value across the world.
I think that's important. Well, you know, on one hand, let's lament the fact that it has not been done. But on the other hand, let's celebrate the fact that it has not been done. Why not us? Why not we? You know, why not me and you and some other persons out there? I think we are at a crossroads where we are developing a better understanding of what is happening. We're developing a better understanding of the opportunities and the weak points and what needs to be done. We also having these conversations in such a way as to, if persons are so minded, you know, they can guide public policy. Because, you know, at the end of the day, we know, you know, government can come up with all of the fancy plans in the world. It's not government that grows an economy. It is the private sector. It is the small businesses for the most part. And so these type of discussion is not simply geared at, hey, you know, let's see what is in it for one or two persons, but really to cast a wide net and to entreat or to impress upon persons who listen, persons who engage, that we have work to do. We have work to do at a national level. We have work to do at a regional level. We have work to do in understanding and developing an appreciation. If the Caribbean becomes better, when the Caribbean becomes better, as the Caribbean becomes better, each individual country within the region is going to also be better. You know, the tide raises all boats. And so we want to, you know, it can't be done completely in this one conversation. These are going to be ongoing. We want to get to the place where we're having the right persons in the seat. We want to, you know, invite individuals out there who are doing the funding, individuals who are interested in doing funding, individuals who are interested in knowing more about the opportunities in Jamaica or any other country, individuals who are interested from Jamaica or any other country are knowing about the opportunities right here in the Bahamas. And so we can now start to create a network and an ecosystem, which is kind of geared at maybe in the first instance, you know, helping the small guy, helping the smaller guy realize and flex and support his entrepreneurial endeavors. And I think if we start to do that, if we could find success in that particular lane, I think that great things could happen, and there could be another route to integration, if you will, other than the not so successful political approach that we have seen so far. I believe that if you follow the money, you can go way more far than following philosophy and ideologies. Yeah,
I agree 100%. And you know, as you would know, you know, I basically put my money where my mouth is. And of course, you know, while I pursue business opportunities in Jamaica, and I'm, you know, working very hard on the sales aspect of it, which is a very key component of getting investors onboarded on any project, you know, sometimes we ignore that it is significantly hinged on your ability to sell your project, right?
Yes.
So your project could be as good as gold, right? But you have to be very, very deliberate about how you go about selling it to investors, right? You know, I'm very, very keen on business opportunities in the Bahamas. I would have had one visit, and I must say, but I was wowed by Bahamas. I was sitting in my hotel room, staring at the ceiling, saying to myself, oh my God, I didn't expect that Bahamas would be as, let's call it, as developed.
Let me stop you there. If you plan on coming back, I think you need to choose your words wisely. People will find you and chastise you for saying stuff like that.
Keep in mind, I'm coming from Jamaica. We have gone through decades of a civil war that has hampered our development.
Yes.
We drive on our roads and we are appalled by the conditions here. We see how taxi drivers behave on the roads and whatever. We experience levels of corruption that is much greater than we would experience in the Bahamas. And if we had a taste of what the Bahamas experience right now, we'd be very happy for it, right?
Well, you know, and again, we kind of running out of time, 2 minutes to go. Like I said, you know, it was absolutely great for you to be here and experience that. And certainly, you know, we expect to see you back here. And, you know, hopefully we'll be able to connect with some other persons out there. You know, come a little bit longer, because I'm not saying that your impression is going to change radically. But there's a little bit more to it than, you know, 2 days will tell you. But the Bahamas, like Jamaica, is ripe for investment. There is a problem to be solved. And part of that problem to be solved is investing and funding those investments and finding a funding ecosystem. We see out of Jamaica companies like Cygnus pump some money into this economy. And we want to see whether or not this hasn't created a type of a lane, a jet stream in which other persons can flow into and to make greater inroads. We're clean, clean out of time. 30 seconds, and that's it.
To say that having experienced Bahamas over the short period that I did, and having had conversations with business owners in the Bahamas to the limited exposure that I have, right, I'm very keen on seeing what way is possible for us to collaborate more with yourselves and other business owners that I've been introduced to explore opportunities on both sides of the Caribbean.
Definitely, right? Definitely.
I'm very, very intrigued and very, very excited about whatever developments we can create and whatever opportunities we can create and however we can create those opportunities. You know, for persons who may be, you know, tuned into this program, you know, let's continue these discussions. Let's continue these conversations.
Most definitely.
You know, there's a unique perspective here on the Jamaican landscape, and likewise in Bahamas. You know, and I'm very eager and willing and able to continue these conversations.
Definitely, and it will happen. You will hear more from Howard Newton. Isaac Newton James, and we will make sure, you know, we'll bring other persons into the conversation. But you have been listening to The Essentials, and on this program, we always end by saying, never, never allow your greatness to become a victim of your unwillingness to change. All that is left to say is walk good, one love, and Ubuntu. Good night.
Big up. Respect.